Afternoon, everybody. My name's Tom Austin. I'm pre-sales engineering manager at Redgate Software. And this afternoon, I want to take you through some of the features of the SQL tool belt. Just before I start, can I see how many of you are already licensed for the Redgate tools? Okay, 50-50, perfect. So hopefully there'll be some new features in there that you guys who have already got licenses haven't seen before. And for the rest of you, everything's going to be new, so fantastic. So there's not going to be a whole lot of slides on this. It's really me showing you the product, so it's more demo than anything else. So that's my second of three slides. So let's get started. So the SQL tool belt, as I say, is a collection of features designed for SQL Server professionals. And the vast majority of them are accessible directly from within SQL Server Management Studio. So I just want to take you through kind of the setup that we have here before we dive into the features. Now, this will be very high level. I'll go into a lot more depth when we look at the actual components as we go through the demonstration. But the first thing that you'll notice is I have these databases with the green database icon. For those of you who are not familiar with the Redgate SQL tool belt, this color happens, the color change happens when we connect our development databases to a source control repository. Now here today, I happen to be using Subversion, and Redgate SQL Source Control is connecting those development databases to our Subversion repository. Now, you don't have to use Subversion. You can use TFS, Git, Perforce, Mercurial, pretty much anything you want to use. I just happen to choose Subversion today, but we certainly don't dictate what you want to use. So we have our development databases connected to a Source Control repository. In addition to this, I also have a Team City project which I've set up, which has the same repository as its source. So when we commit our changes from the development database into the source control repository, those changes will then be available to our Team City build. How many people are familiar with Team City? How many people are familiar with continuous integration systems in general? Okay, so the idea here is what we're going to do is use some of the components of the SQL tool belt to put together an automated process so that every time we make a change to the database, we commit that change to source control. Every time a new change is detected in source control, this automated process will fire off and run through all of the steps that we define. Now, the steps that we have defined within this process are based on the Redgate components. So if I look in this project, you'll see that I have two build steps, a Redgate SQL CI build and a Redgate SQL CI test. So these are the two steps that will essentially run. Now again, just like source control systems, just because I've chosen Team City to work with today, we could use Jenkins, Hudson, TFS again, Bamboo, whatever continuous integration system is in place at your organization. If there isn't one, then Team City is a great place to start, but you know, you can make your own choice. So, with that in mind, let's switch back to Management Studio and start thinking about changes that we'd like to make. So the databases that I'm gonna be working with today are these two SimpleTalk development databases. Sorry, it's a little bit difficult to see here, but I've got a collection of SimpleTalk databases named Development, Integration, Production, Testing, UAT, just to simulate the various different environments that we might be working with and deploying to. So in our SimpleTalk development database, we have a whole bunch of tables, one of them being a contacts table, and today we're going to take the approach that, you know, let's imagine we're going to make a change to this table. Now, the first thing I want to do to get started is to actually get my own copy of the development database. Now, this is considered best practice. I appreciate that not everybody is able to have dedicated copies of their database per developer. SQL Source Control allows you to choose. So you can choose whether you have a dedicated model where every developer has their own copy of the database to work on, or a shared model where there's one development database that each developer works on centrally. Of course, if you have one database, then it makes it a lot easier to share changes because there's no one else to share it with. But in this situation, I'm going to create a new database for me to work with. So I'm going to call my database SimpleTalk Dev Tom. And I'll do a quick refresh. And we can now see we've got this fresh, empty database, nothing in it at the moment, ready for us to work with. Now, to link this up to our existing source control repository, all I'm going to do first of all is copy the path to our source control folder, and then right-click on my new database, SimpleTalk Dev Tom, and choose Link Database to Source Control. And all of these additional options are added to Management Studio once you've installed the Redgate SQL toolbelt. So on the resulting tab, we get a choice of which source control system we're deciding to link to. As I said, today I'm working with Subversion, so I'm going to choose that option. And then I'm going to paste in the repository URL, so the path to that source control repository. And down the bottom of the screen here, you can see this is where you'd make your choice between a dedicated database development model, every developer having their own database, or the shared model where there's one development database and each developer works on it. As I've created my own one for me, I'm working in dedicated, so I'll leave the top option selected and then click link. And this will make that connection between the source control repository and my development database. But there's still nothing in the database at this point. So the first thing I'm going to do is go to the Get Latest tab in SQL Source Control, and I'm going to pull all of the objects out of Source Control into my development database. And so if I can just choose here which, sorry, there's a slight delay on my mouse cursor, so it's almost in the wrong position to click. So I can choose here exactly which objects I want to pull down into my new local development database. And so, for example, I could choose individual objects, or I could choose the whole entire lot if I can find the right place on the screen to click to select those, probably there somewhere. Okay, so I'll choose some of these tables, and so I'm not sure why my point is not quite in the right place. Anyway, so this is how we actually choose and select exactly which objects need to be brought into our development database. In the first instance, of course, you're going to want everything, because then you can get started. After that, if you're working in a shared model, there may be changes that your colleagues are working on that you aren't ready to commit to source control. So that's why it's important for you to be able to pick and choose exactly what comes down. So we want to make this change to our contacts table. One of the first things that we probably want to do before we start thinking about changing database objects is actually to perform some form of impact analysis. And one of the features of the Redgate SQL toolbelt is a component called SQL Dependency Tracker. And what that allows us to do is to right-click on a database, choose View Dependency Diagram, and this will launch the product, which will give us a visual representation of the database objects and the connections and dependencies between them. So you can see immediately everything becomes clear. This is obviously a bit too much for us to work with in the first instance. But there's a few things that you can do. So first of all, there's a few different formats, layout styles that you can use so that you can work with something that's more preferential to you. My personal preference is for hierarchic, so I'll choose that, and it will relay out the diagram in something that I find more comfortable to work with. Now, we know that we want to work with the contacts table. So I can pop in the search box contacts, and it will show me the results, and I can choose the contacts table. And as I choose the contacts table, it will highlight it in the diagram for me. So I can see here this is my contacts table in this particular diagram. Now, I want to know the objects that will be directly affected by any change that I might make to that table. So I can, using the buttons at the top here, choose to include the connected objects, invert that selection, and remove everything else from the project. And then what I'm left with is a diagram that has my contacts table and those directly dependent objects that you can see on the screen here. So from that very big diagram, we've been able to zoom right into the area of interest and just focus on exactly the objects that are important to us. Now, there's a few more things I can do here. So if I select one of these objects, you'll notice that we have color-coded dependency information. So in the red here, we have used by, and in the blue, uses. So the contacts table uses our country codes table, and the contacts table is used by our get contacts stored procedure. We can also expand these objects so that we can actually see which columns make up the tables and views. And we can even right-click on these objects and view the actual SQL script as well, so we can see exactly what the structure of that particular object is. So it's really, really useful for getting to the bottom of things before we start making changes to the database objects themselves. I've actually worked with a number of organisations who use this quite a lot, one just down the road from here, actually. And when they first sort of started trying to take a more agile approach to database development, this was a really useful tool for them, because what they would do is regularly produce the full database diagram, and because the printing engine on this allows you to kind of pick how many pages you spread it across, they'd cover a whole wall with a database, and then when they had their daily stand-up meetings, they could huddle around and talk about the different parts of the database that they'd be working on that day. But of course, you don't have to do that. You can not kill thousands of trees. Up to you. So now that we've performed a little bit of impact analysis, and we can see here that there's some other objects we'd want to take care of. Example, our get contact stored procedure has a relationship with our contacts table. We can now start thinking about actually making those changes. So firstly, let's make a change to our contacts table. Let's imagine we're going to add a new row. Maybe we're going to start storing people's Twitter handles. So I'll just add a new column to that table. And then we saw in the impact analysis that we need to take care of our get contact stored procedure as well. So let's make a quick change to the get contact stored procedure. And this is actually one place where I'd like to start talking about a different part of the SQL tool belt, SQL prompt. Anybody in the room using SQL prompt? Fantastic. So one of the first things I'd like to mention is this colouring. So you'll notice here when I'm opening a new query window, we have this green colour. And that's because we've actually defined in SQL prompts options a collection of expressions that represent our various different environments. So here you can see if it's got dev in the database name, I'm considering it a development environment, and I've chosen the color green. If it's got production in the database name, then it's a production environment, and it's got a red color. And what that means is that actually, as I change the target that this query tab applies to, the color of it actually updates dynamically as well. So if I choose a production environment, all of a sudden I get the red coloring. It's giving me that visual indication that perhaps I should be a little bit more careful about what I'm executing here. And you can configure your own setups for this, you know, based upon server names, database names, however it's going to work for you. Now, those of you that use SQL prompt regularly will know that its core functionality is an almost IntelliSense-style auto-completion tool. So as I press a type a comma here, you'll see that it pops up and allows me to choose exactly what I'm going to type next. Now that's its sort of basic function, but there's actually a whole lot more than just auto-completion in SQL prompt. And some particularly interesting features are available around how you might increase standardization across the team. So development teams are increasing in size. We've got more people working with our database code, which often means more inconsistency in the way that our database code is presented and ultimately stored in source control. So there's a few things that you can do with SQL prompt. For example, we can define a preferred style. We can define how we prefer our code to be laid out. So again, in the SQL prompt options menu, We have a style section where you can create your own style. And there's all types of different options in here around the case of certain words, schema statements, data statements, expressions, commas and parentheses. One of the most popular ones I see actually is whether we place a comma at the beginning of the line or at the end of the line. Who thinks at the end of the line? Two and a half. Two and one don't care. And I take it the rest of you think at the start of the line then. Okay, so let's define in our style that we will place our commas at the start of the line. And now, whenever we want to reformat a chunk of our SQL code, we can either use the key combination, or in this case, I'm going to use the drop-down menu, choose Format SQL, and it will relay out our code in that preferred style. Here you can see placing the commas at the start, and also adding our semicolons at the end. But there's lots of different options that you can use. And what this means is that you can actually define a company or team preferred style and share that across the development team so that they can then work in their own way. And before they commit to source control, they can reformat the code into that agreed style, which makes it a lot easier to read for everybody. And it allows you to get a little bit more consistency, a little bit more standardization. Now, in addition to this, we also have the ability to define snippets in SQL prompt. So if I just make that change, let's imagine this is a get contact stored procedure. Let's imagine we wanted to standardize some of our object creation scripts, and we want to have a particular layout, a particular style, whenever we're getting something from a table. So we want to create a template, essentially, for all our get stored procedures. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to use a built-in SQL prompt snippet, first of all. So CP gives us the create procedure template. But then I'm going to tweak this slightly. So first of all, I'm going to remove this schema name at the top. I'm going to say, OK, all of our stored procedures that do this activity are going to start get underscore and then the table name. I'm going to put the table name inside of dollar signs. And then in the body, SSF, SQL prompt snippet for select star from. And then again, I'm going to use the dollar sign table name, dollar sign. Now, there might be some additional things we want to add to this. Maybe we decide that we always want to have the person who made the change in the comments at the top. So I'm going to use dollar sign user dollar sign. And maybe today's date, for example. Dollar sign, date, dollar sign. And you could carry on with this. So now that I've laid this out, I'm now going to highlight it and then right-click and choose Create Snippet. And I'm going to give this snippet a name, so I'm going to call this CP2 just for convenience. And you'll notice that it's picked up on the fact that I have this placeholder called table name. And I can provide a default value here if I want to. So maybe by default, it doesn't make a complete load of sense in this case, but maybe by default I want to select from the contacts table as we were looking at get contacts before. Now once I've saved this snippet, it means that whenever I want to create a procedure of this type, I can just type the snippet code, so CP2 in this case, hit my completion key, and a few things have happened. So first of all, it's dropped in the currently logged in user at the top where it's had the author placeholder, and it's put in today's date where it had the date placeholder. For the table name placeholder, it's used the default value, so in this case, contacts. But if I wanted to change this to, say, be the blogs table, then I can just change it in one place, and it's actually changed every single location throughout my script. Brilliant. Again, with organizations that we've worked with, we've seen teams create their own standardized object creation templates and share them across the entire team so that whenever they need to create a table, a stored procedure, a function, a view, whatever, they use one of these snippets, and often they'll just have a whole list of comments at the top where you type in the schema name, you type in relevant object names, and then the whole script is just populated for you because all it's doing is replacing those placeholders. So this is a very simple example, but I'm sure you can imagine you could have some very long...
Run that replace, and go replace all, but it's kind of, yeah, this is much better.
Fantastic. So let's create our get blog stored procedure as well. Now, one final thing that I want to mention in SQL prompt. If you're anything like me, I tend to end up with many tabs across the screen as I'm working with in Management Studio. And sometimes it can be very difficult to find the one that I want to work on again. So SQL prompt has a concept of tab history. So if you press Control Q, then you'll get this pop-up that allows you to search in your many tabs. So if you were working on a particular object, type the name of the object in here, and it will find that particular script for you. But what's really, really interesting about the tab history feature is it's not just your open tabs, it's also the ones that you've closed previously. So here we can see all of the tabs that I've had historically, and I can type in here a search term and find all of the tabs where something in particular is referenced. And this also works if Management Studio crashes on you. Then when you open it back up, all of the tabs that you were working on are there again, and you can search back historically as well in the ones that you didn't see. Yeah, and it's all gone. Well, SQL prompt stops that happening. Again, part of the Redgate SQL tool belt. So we've made a couple of changes here. We've looked at snippets, which we can share across our team so that we've all got a standardized approach. And we've also looked at styles as well that we can share across the team so that we've all got a standardized layout of our SQL code. So let's make these changes. Well, we've made the changes. Now let's commit these changes to source control. So you'll notice in the Object Explorer, I've now got these little blue indicators on the objects that I've made changes to. And this is telling me that these are changes that have yet to be committed to source control. So to commit these changes, all I need to do is right-click on the database name and choose commit changes to source control. And then this will do a comparison between what's in my local database and what's in the source control repository. So you can see here we've got a couple of edits, edit to the contact table, get contact stored procedure, and then this new get blog stored procedure. And if we click on each of these individually, we can actually see a comparison of the actual SQL between the local copy and the source control version there as well. So we can now add a commit comment, something more helpful than made some changes, but you get the idea, and click commit to pass that over into our source control system. Now, if you're in the shared model, that's it. You're done. Your changes are safe. If you're in the dedicated model like we are, then you're going to want to, the rest of your team are going to want to get these changes out of source control. And so, again, we can choose a different development database, go to the Get Latest tab, and this will list all of the changes that exist in source control but haven't yet occurred in your database. And now we've got this method of actually very easily sharing changes across a development team. And as I mentioned before, SQL Source Control supports various different source control systems. We recently improved our support for Git so that you can do pushes and pulls from within the IDE as well.
This is source control on the schema, I presume.
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is the schema. You're very right. However, we don't feel that just source control in your schema is usually enough. It doesn't give a true representation of your development database. And so what we also allow you to do is source control your static data or reference data alongside that in the repository. So if you right-click on a database and go down to this other SQL source control options, you'll see there's an option in there to link or unlink static data. And this will allow you to choose exactly which tables you want to source control the data of alongside your schema. And that gives you a much more complete picture of you know what your development database should look like. So whilst we were talking there, of course, our commit to source control triggered this build process in Team City. I'm not going to go into the build too much today. You could probably spend a whole hour on each component of it. But essentially, what the build is doing is we're taking the latest version of the files that have been committed to source control, and we're seeing if from those we can recreate the database from scratch. And this is really useful because often, you know, you can have a view or a stored procedure that references a column in a table that no longer exists. And SQL Server's fine with that as long as you create and drop them in the right order. However, as soon as you try and recreate this from scratch, it's going to get to the view that says select star from table that doesn't exist, and it's going to fail. And so you can very quickly find all those kind of invalid objects that you have within your database. Once we've proved that we can rebuild this database from scratch, we also then wrap it up in a NuGet package, which is one of the preferred formats for automated deployment tools. Now, that wouldn't be a complete build and test, just because we know that we can reproduce it from scratch. There's also a whole bunch of other stuff that we want to be able to do with it. And that's where I'd like to move on to testing a little bit more. So there's a couple of options within this plugin that allow us to do some extra things rather than just recreating it from scratch. So here you can see a couple of things that we can do. First of all, we can run tests, every test or a subset of tests. And then secondarily, we can generate test data so that we can populate our database with a known set of test data before we run our tests on it. And this gives us the opportunity to do it automatically. Every time a change is committed to source control, let's build it, let's run the tests with a known set of generated data. Rather than look too much into that automation side of things, because essentially it's a page of scrolling text, it's not very visual for demonstration purposes, what I'm going to show you is the user end of it. So what is actually happening in the background is the same, but we're going to look at it from an end user point tool point of view. So the first thing there that I mentioned is tests. So as part of the SQL tool belt, we have a component named SQL test, which allows us to write, manage, and run unit tests for our SQL Server databases. So here in our SimpleTalk databases, you can see I have a sample collection of tests here that I've already created. If we take a look at one of those tests, you can see that these are written in T-SQL code, so if you can work on databases, you can write unit tests as well. And just to walk you through, this is a simple test to check that our add contact stored procedure is able to successfully add an email address to our contacts table. And so what it does is it creates a fake copy of our contacts table. It then executes our stored procedure with a couple of parameters here. And then once it's executed the stored procedure, it then performs a select from our fake copy of the contacts table to see what email address is in the table now, and finally compares that to what it expected to be in there. So this should match up all the way across. So at the moment, if I run this test by clicking the little run button, we get a green tick and everything's fine because it's working okay. However, if I was to make a change to our add contact stored procedure, oh, by the way, that's another SQL prompt feature. You know, like Visual Studio, go to definition. So if you want to jump into the alter of a particular object, then you can just highlight the name of that object in your text and then hit F12, and it will go into alter it as well. So if in here I were to change the number of characters for our email address from 30 down to 3 and make that change and run our test again, we now see that we get this error message. So the test has failed. The reason being, I'll read this for you. Test failed, test email in PRC add contact, expected SQL in the city at red-gate.com, but got SQL because it only returned 3 characters. So this is a failure. And this is the type of thing that we would want to run automatically every time we make changes. Because of the way that SQL test is built, you can actually share these changes across your team via SQL source control as well. So if one of the team members writes a new unit test for a particular object, when they commit to source control, that test goes along with it, and then the rest of the team can get the latest version of the tests when they get the latest version of the schema. So the next product that I want to talk about is the data generation component. So we've seen how we can write and run tests from an end user point of view. I've also shown you that it's just a tick box in the automation project, the plugin that we have for TeamCity, TFS, all the rest of them. So ideally, we would like our developers to run these automatically before they commit to source control. But if they don't, it gets picked up by the automated build. Now, we also mentioned that it would be nice if we could generate a set of test data before we run our tests. And I mentioned that we have this checkbox here. So if I want to, I can just put a check in here, and it will run our SQL data generation tool to populate the database with test data before the tests are run. If you want to use a specific project, then you can put the name of the project in here. Otherwise, if you leave this blank, it will just make it up for you. And what's nice about the Redgate data generation is that it's kind of intelligent in the way that it approaches it. So it will make a best guess at what type of data you would like to add to your table based upon the data types and the table names and column names. So, for example, in our contacts table, we right-click our contacts table and choose populate with data, SQL data generator will launch, and it will have made a best guess at what type of data we would want to put in at each of our columns. But along with that intelligence comes great flexibility in the way that you can actually tweak the project after it's made its first initial attempts. And that means that it's a very powerful way of defining the format and the structure of the test data that you would like to add to your database.
The dummy data one looks so dummy.
Correct. And it's also foreign key aware as well, so you know it's going to make sure everything still matches up. So here we have our contacts table, and you can kind of see here for contact full names, it's guessed that we want people's names. So it's put in there Maggie Dominguez, Roger Hoover, Jeffrey Ashley, etc. For phone work, it's guessed that we want a phone number. This is actually US style by default, but it's very easy for us to for us to tweak it. So for example, if Irish dialing code is 0034353. So what I could do here is 00353 at the start and then tweak the rest of the number so that it matches up. Maybe we only need 2 and we can get rid of the last section as well. But using these regular expressions, we're actually able to build up a picture of the data that we would like to add to this particular column. It's not particularly clear, but if you want to see this clearer, please do come over and see me, and I can show you on the laptop. Addresses, it's guessed at 20 Oak Drive, 82 New Street, 47 Milton Street, so that seems pretty sensible. Address line 2, it's got this slightly wrong. So here we've got repetition. So we've now got 20 Oak Drive, 208 Clarendon Street. That doesn't sound right. So we need to adjust this. We need to tweak this. But this time what I can do is actually use the drop-down to select one of the built-in generators that are available. So here you can see these are just the geographic ones, but we've got all sorts of personal information that we can choose from as well. In this case, I'm going to choose a UK town, and for address line 3, I'm going to use a UK county, for example. And now we've got something that looks much more sensible. You've also got the ability to perform logic across columns. So if you have an order date and a shipping date, and you want the shipping date to be, you know, between 3 and 10 days after order date, then you can build that logic into the way that this data gets generated.
Can I apply also logic to numeric columns? Like I want the numbers to be in a range, random, but in a range, this format, and comply with the rules.
Yeah, certainly. There's so many different things that you can do. So you can even use things like weighted lists. So if you've got 5 or 6 values, but you know 90% of them are these 2 particular values, then there's a weighted list generator that you can choose from the generic section at the top. So weighted list, regular expressions, Python scripts, all sorts of things that you can use. And once you've saved these off as part of the project, all that information is stored within the project. And whilst the data that it produces appears random, obviously every time you run the same project, you're going to get the same random data. So you've got a known set of test data to work against.
Okay, I'm a cube builder. That's my job. I populate data warehouses. And I'm thinking my greatest challenge is sometimes show the cube, show the demo, but I have nothing. And sometimes I have no permission to use real data. I need to just make a demo.
Mm-hmm.
But this data generator seems like a great help just to show off what the cube is capable to do. Now, there are some things like surrogate keys and all this stuff. So that will not help me just like make the fact table, make the dimensions. But beyond that, the surrogate keys, I'll have to make a separate statement, or how do you like
that's right, yeah. So it's really about populating the underlying structures, the tables, with that initial data. But that's a really good point that you bring up there. One of the things that I always find fascinating about data generator is how many different roles use it. One guy I met at an event in the US was actually one of the sales team. And he came over and he said, I love your SQL data generator tool. And I was like, really? Why? Why? I love it too, but why do you love it? And they produced software for healthcare institutions. And one of the things that he found great about it was that he could take their product that they were trying to sell, and he could go into these hospitals and kind of get a feel for the way that their records appeared, so their record numbers and the way that they put together their patient IDs and things like that. And then he'd quickly tap in the regular expressions into SQL Data Generator, produce 10 million records, and then when he gave the demo an hour later, all of the people he was trying to sell this product to could see realistic, it was like they were using their data. And so they almost felt like, actually, you know, I'm already seeing how good this could be for us. But, you know, that's one example. There's so many different ways it could be used. But, yeah, demonstration purposes.
So how many records you can produce?
There's a few different options, really. So you can specify a numeric value, and it will just keep producing that until it reaches that number. You can specify a proportion of another table. So if you want your orders table to be 300% the size of your customers table, you can do that. Or you can specify a time period. So you could say, produce records for the next 20 minutes while I go and have a coffee, and then you'll have a data set when you get back. The next obvious question is, how long is it going to take? I can't tell you that. It very much depends on what data you're generating. So for example, you can also include images. Got some pictures here of Redgate employees, past and present. So those types of things, it's going to take longer to generate those. But if we maybe did, let's do, I don't know, 10,000 rows here, 10,000 contacts for our contact table. So I'll just set that as a direct numeric value, and then choose generate data. And it will take 2 seconds it took to actually generate the data itself, because you get this nice little report afterwards, which you can see. Again, you won't be able to see it very well here. So it's very difficult for me to give you an accurate figure on how long it's going to take, but it's pretty quick. You know, it's not going to take ages.
Usually it's for demo purposes, so it's not that
critical. Sure. Okay, so we've looked at test data generation, we've looked at unit testing, we've looked at shared styles using SQL prompt, shared snippets using SQL prompt, we've looked at source control in our database code and our database static data. There are so many things that I could show you from the SQL tool belt. Unfortunately, there's no way I have enough time to show you all of them today. But I hope that those things that I have shown you in the last 40 minutes have been new and interesting, and hopefully something in there that you think you might want to go and try out for those of you that are already licensed. If you aren't already licensed, there is a free trial version available from the Redgate website, so you can download an evaluation copy and have a go at this yourself. It's unrestricted other than time, so it's only you're going to get all full functionality until the trial runs out, essentially. But I think there, with 5 minutes to go, I'll probably stop and invite any questions that anybody may have.
Is this the data compare schema
tool? Yes, so within the SQL toolbar, we do have schema comparison and data comparison. Probably our most familiar, most recognized products, Compare Pro, Data Compare Pro. And they allow you to compare between database to database, source control to database, source control to source control, backups, snapshots. So if you ever have need for object level recovery or row level recovery, often the comparison tools can be a much quicker approach than restoring the entire backup. We looked at SQL source control, SQL prompt. You've got SQL Backup Pro, which is our backup solution, dependency tracker, data generator. There's so many tools within there. One thing I did forget to mention, though, which I will touch upon very quickly, is that actually I loaded them all up individually from within Management Studio. But actually, if you are on a particular project with a particular tool open, so such as SQL Data Generator, you can switch between our products and it maintains the context. So here, if we're working with our SQL Server Dev Grant database and we wanted to switch to our documentation tool, then we could load that up automatically from within the SQL Data Generator, which I'll show you in just a second. So just wait for this project to finish. And then up the top here, if we click the product button, you can see that we can switch to all the other SQL Toolbelt tools with that same project available to us. So as I said, SQL Doc, for example, or to allow us to document our databases very quickly and very easily. Any questions from anybody? So the question is, with SQL Dependency Tracker, is it possible to include multiple databases within the dependency diagram? The answer is yes, you can resolve external references and include all of that on the same diagram. So I'd definitely encourage you to download it and give it a try. Only if there is a connection between them. So if there is...
A trust connection.
Yeah, well, only if there is a dependency, because otherwise you essentially have two separate diagrams. But if there is a dependency, then you can you click the import external references and it will pull the rest of it in.
Does it detect star procedures that are across link servers? Because when the script is generated, then everything is done on transactions. So the transaction and rollback transaction. And that will fail if there is a link server involved, because you can't really deploy a star procedure that has a link server on it on a transaction.
Yep.
Is there a way, is the new product to detect that might be excluded to a separate?
So whilst I don't think it detects that automatically, what you can actually do is change the transaction isolation level, which should allow you to get around that issue. So if you come over to the booth later, I'll show you within the product, but there's an option where you can change that, and then that should. Okay. So I think that's probably version 10 that come in. Is there any other... Okay, well, in that case, thank you all very, very much for coming to see me this lunchtime, and I'll let you get away for the football, which kicks off in about 15 minutes. The next session. That's what I meant. Next session. Thanks, guys. Cheers.